What song do you want to hear, Dan?
Beer!
You are now listening to America's favorite craft beer podcast, a show that covers tricks, tips, and trends inside the craft beer industry. I am your host, craft beer enthusiast, Tom Simpson. Next to me, my co-host, a man with more untapped check-ins than you have steps on your Fitbit, the adjunct professor himself, Mr. Dan Holloway. Tune in, sit down, and drink up. And most importantly, thank you for joining us on another episode of America the Brew.
Guess I'll have to wait until then. And if I get drunk, well, I'll pass out on the floor now, baby. You won't bother me no more. And if you're drinking, well, you know that you're my friend.
Welcome to Season 4, Episode 8 of America the Brutiful. Everybody's a little Irish on St. Patrick's Day, so we hope you're downing a Guinness. Unless, of course, you're driving, in which case, don't do that. Put it down, but maybe eat some corned beef while listening to this episode. We have a lot to unpack this episode. We got a little bit of the old, we got a little bit of the new, but let's start with the old, right? And it's some sad news, and that's that one of the OG craft beer bars in the area announced that they will be closing their doors next month. Spuiten Duyvel, it's a bar that's been open for over 20 years and one of the OG craft beer bars in the city. Sad news. So for many years, this was one of the only bars in New York City that had Lambic available. The owner said craft beer's current ubiquity combined with rising rents have made operating unsustainable. Its last day is going to be April 21st. Which is the day after Swansea Day. They will be hosting Swansea Day there. My original plan was to go to Monk's Cafe in Philadelphia for Swansea. That may still be my plan, but they do such a great job, and I love Monk's, so I may still do that, but I am considering maybe going here before it's gone. So we'll see, and if you are planning on Swansea Day, you have a few great options, but again, sad news of the closing of that bar. Also want to talk real quick about the Untappd Community Awards. You guys have seen a lot of those go up, a lot of breweries touting some of their beers. Wanted to just highlight a few of them. Right, we went to Marlowe recently, so congratulations to them. Their brown ale, The Broken and the Dead, is the number one brown ale in New York. Also, Bird's Mouth, a brewery I always want to talk more about on this podcast. We had an interview with them before they opened. Their Vienna Lager was the number one American lager in New Jersey. Their Mexican Dark, the number two Mexican lager in New Jersey. So really want to highlight both of those. Later this episode, I'll be talking to the founder of Pints for Prostates. It's a great, great, great campaign raising awareness through beer. I think it's a very important interview, so I hope you guys stick through and listen to that. But coming up right after a quick break, I take a trip to the Drewery, one of New Jersey's newest breweries. So I'll be talking to Drew from the Drewery, and that's coming up right after this.
Don't you like when the winter's gone and all of a sudden it starts getting warm? The trees and the grass start looking fresh and the sun and the sky be looking at best. Birds be singing, flowers be blooming, a lot of brand new cars be zooming. My girls look at the best they could be, and the guys be duking, duking down, you see. Besides all that, I like the warm weather, because that's when you can get yourself together.
And welcome back to Season 4, Episode 8 of America, the Brutiful. Today I'm in Lawrenceville, New Jersey, home of the Drewery, one of New Jersey's newest and hottest breweries, and I want to bring in Drew, owner and brewer at the Drewery.
That sounds about right.
Does that sound right? Yeah. All right. So let's start here. We're going to get into more interesting stuff, I promise.
Sure.
But let's start with the name. Your name is Drew. The brewery's named the Drewery. How often do you get asked what's going on with the name? Tell us about the name.
You're asking how many times I have to roll my eyes about it?
Yes.
So long story kind of short. Years ago, when we first started brewing down my basement, we were talking to people, and, you know, they're like, oh, there's this new app called Untappd, because, again, we're going back about 10 years.
Uh-huh.
So they wanted to start logging everything in, and obviously brewery / Drewery, all rhymes and stuff like that. So they started checking it in as Drewery, which is pretty straightforward to the name.
Sure.
And then we looked it up, and, of course, we were not original on that at all. And we looked at some other variations, and we switched out the Drew for the DR or the W for the U, and there was zero things on Untappd with DRUERY. So what happened is we took it there, and then that stepped like that for the next 10 years, or I shouldn't say 10 years, now I guess it is 10 years. Next 6 to 8 years, we kept it there. And then, you know, COVID happened and we were thinking about keeping it, blah, blah, blah. Went through, looked at a place in Philly to try and start up, ended up not doing it because COVID hit. And we finally found this location in Lawrenceville. And prior to changing it, we finally Googled the word Drury and found out that it actually means something.
It's an actual word.
And we were like, well, that's kind of funny. And it's, you know, the defunct thing of D-R-U-R-Y, which is an object of love or lust. And then essentially I put it up to my family and said, well, are we going to keep the name? Are we going to change the name? And I still wanted to change it so I didn't have to roll my eyes as often as it is, because it still sounds kind of egotistical. But I kind of got outvoted by my wife and my mother.
Yeah, you're not going to beat them in a vote.
No, and I have two daughters, so I'm surrounded by women. And if I was to change that, I would never hear the end of it.
So you said about 10 years ago is when you came up with the name.
Yes.
So you've been homebrewing for how long?
10 years.
10 years. So how did you get into beer? Was there kind of a beer that you had that's like, fuck, that's amazing, I love beer now, as opposed to before where it's like, yeah, I'm at a party, I'm drinking some beers, I'm at a bar, I'm drinking some beers. What beer got you into the craft beer world?
So I think the original beer was, it's going to sound bad because I actually think it's kind of like one of those beers that is a transitional beer for you. Mm-hmm. But obviously at college and stuff like that, you know, depending on what college you went to, you had your Millers or your Bushes or whatever it might be. But then one day I went out and somebody had bought me a Honey Brown, which is,
oh, yeah.
I don't even think they make it anymore.
It's from like upstate New York, Honey Brown. Yeah. I remember the first time I had Honey Brown was at the Anchor Bar in Buffalo.
Oh my God, this is.
And I'm like, this beer is amazing.
It was the most incredible brown, buttery beer that I've ever had, sweet and everything else. So for, you know, young me, I was like, this is delicious. And then obviously, you know, once you start going out of the realm of simple beers and everything else, you kind of get into all your other ones where all of a sudden somebody brings in, as we talked earlier about, a heady, quote unquote, or something like that.
Of course, and then you're like, back in that day, that was like a $100 can
because
impossible to get.
Yeah, you had to have somebody that ran all the way up there and essentially picked it up for you and brought it home. And you're like, oh my God, what is this? You're supposed to keep it in the can. I don't understand. You pour it into the glass and it's hazy and you're still laughing about it. But yeah, you know, from there, Hetty, obviously we got a Focal Banger at the same time or roughly the same time. And from there, we just kind of started exploring. And, you know, this is going back probably 15 years at that point, mm-hmm. you know. And I had fermented wine when I was younger because it was easier to get your own home fermented wine than it was to get other drinks. And that kind of led into the whole idea of making beer and everything else. And obviously your first bit sucks and you kind of live and learn and kind of keep growing. But Honey Brown, delicious.
So your IPAs have been selling really well. I wanted to make a point of trying something super different. So let's talk about the first beer that we have in our hands here that we've been drinking.
Yeah, the Womango Hob. So I'm not sure if you know this, but we brew a lot of different beers. And to try and come up with a cool name for every single beer is next to impossible and kind of cliche.
Is it like Simpsons did it? Everybody, like every name has been taken?
It's more, I don't want to spend as much time thinking up a badass name for something that we may only brew once or twice.
Sure.
So, you know, eventually we might have blah, 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 formerly known as Womango Hop, which Womango was an IPA I brewed probably 7 years ago, and it was literally just an IPA fermented over mangoes. I came in here and I'm hanging out and somebody was just like, hey, you know what I really want is some type of habanero beer. And I was like, well, I do have a recipe for Womango. Let's add habanero. Womango Hob. Cool. That sounds perfect. That makes it super easy. You know, spice is always one of those things that we talk about in beers and some people love it. Some people hate it. One of our beer tenders gets choked up over black pepper. So she can't even drink this one. My wife, on the other hand, can drink lava and be fine. And she just asks if there's any heat whatsoever. So we started off this one just with just 10 habaneros in our small three barrel and deveined them, seeded them. Yeah. And this way we kept all the spice down to a bare minimum. And we're actually on our last keg of it now, which means I'm probably going to siphon off 5 gallons of that. And for all those people that have been talking about it not being spicy enough, I'm probably going to add another 10 habaneros to 5 gallons and then make them regret it in the morning.
Nice.
I'll have them sign the keg, too. A one-cup challenge.
Now, you've been open about 4 months now. I think that's about correct, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we opened up technically in November, but officially in December.
So I want to talk about this. It's not, honestly, not that normal, being open just a few months and kind of getting some hype. And you've had Crowlers sell out. Your beer is showing up on, like, the secondary market. Are you surprised at all by the early success? Or, I mean, is it shocking at all that it's that quick?
Oh, my. I mean, you know, we went into it hoping that we were going to make drinkable beer. And we had semi-drinkable beer to start. You know, I think as a brewer and everything else, and, you know, even as the owner of something, you always put a lot of effort into what you're producing and quality and, you know, making sure everything is good. So, you know, the craziest thing is stepping up. I have a 20-gallon system at home, and it's very similar, unit tanks, everything else like that. So trying to go from the 20-gallon system up to the 100-gallon system isn't that big of a jump, but it kind of is for a lot of recipes. So when we first started doing our hazies, you know, cut and paste hazy, let's see how it reacts. All of a sudden, it's now no longer hazy. It's a New England, and
the color falls out.
Yeah, you know, and it's just a lot more looking into it and being like, well, maybe we have to adjust our protein levels or this or that, whatever it might be, to try and get it to where we want it. And, you know, 3 iterations in, it's like, you know, we have Nectaronica 3 up there, which is the 3rd generation. The first one kind of came out like a West Coast. And we're starting to finally maintain that haze level that we're aiming for and a little bit more of the body and everything else. As far as the Crowler sales, we're very fortunate, and I'll pay some homage to Troon, because I feel like we have a lot of people in the area that are already used to seeing beers go onto the secondary market because of them. You know, limited release stuff where you can't get it unless you're actually trying to get it. And I think we had people come in that were not necessarily, I don't want to compare ourselves to them because we do a lot of other beers, and I know he wishes he could too, but people expect what they expect from him, as has been discussed and everything else. So when we do a hazy, you know, we do our own kind of version of it. We try and make it to what people are looking for, because you are, you know, a brewer number one, but you're a business number two, and you have to still supply the demand for what you're looking for. So if somebody goes, oh, I really liked your original hazy, I just wish it had more body. Okay, let's try and make this a little more body. Oh, I really wish it had some more hop saturation. Okay, let's saturate it till you can't comprehend it. You know, if we have to dial it back, we will, you know, but it's interesting with, like,
now what's going to happen if I feel like kind of the super craft beer nerd market for IPAs is having it super green, super, like, the hops are just sucking out the moisture in your mouth. If that's what they want, is that what you want to give them? Or do you want to say, hey, this one might taste better?
So what I try and tell my bartenders is, yes, people in the area slightly have been conditioned to want greener and greener beer. Mm-hmm. It's always interesting when somebody comes in and talks to you and they say, well, what do you like? Oh, I like hoppy. And it's like, well, what do you mean by that? Like, hoppy IPA. Well, what do you mean by hoppy IPA? Are you a traditional? Are you a hazy? Are you New England? Do you like more West Coast, East Coast? Do you like, I like it when it burns the back of my throat. Okay, so you like green hop burn hoppy. Okay, well, in that case, you know what? We just put on this crowd or this keg or whatever. We have some cans. To satisfy both ends of it, I say, if you want it now, drink it now. If you want it more mellow, throw it into your fridge for 2 weeks, pull it out, pour it, or even a month even, you know, because, you know, when you, I had the Troon that was good when I first had it, and I let, somebody brought it the same Troon in before, and it sat in their fridge for like 3 months, and they poured it again, and it went from, like, you know, X level to the sky. You know, it was delicious after 3 months. Just the separation of the flavors, it wasn't just burning in the back of their throat. But you have to understand that whether you want a steak or an aged steak, you know, time is the variance of that, whether you're doing it yourself at home or we serve it here. If we take away one of the options, people are going to be upset. If we serve it early, people are going to try it and they're going to be upset, but we can always warn them, hey, this one is super green. It's still got some hot burn in it. So if you like that, that's great. If not, maybe try this one. This one's been on tap for 2 weeks now. It's settled out. It's still delicious. Totally your call.
Well, I will say I came here for the sale of the Amicitric 2, and the person who, the woman who was...
Lindsay.
She was like, just so you know, this is a little green, so you might want to give it some time. And I was a little surprised by that, because that sounds like something a consumer might be like, whoa, then why are you selling it to me? But that's also what people want, it seems. You know, and I'm with you, especially with Troon IPAs. They're hoppy ales. Yeah, I think it's like a month and a half is like the sweet spot of when they're really, really good.
Oh, I agree with you. I think, you know, even our IPAs, I think one of the last ones we released after 2.5 weeks, I'm trying to get it out to 3.5 weeks in the fermenter, just because you still have some hot burn, but it's not going to require a Pepcid pill as soon as you take a sip, you know? You know, hops are so crazy acidic, especially when you're dry hopping in the amounts that you kind of do for these hazies. And people just kind of have to understand that. So we try and give them an explanation and everything else. We're not trying to dissuade their sale, but also saying, hey, you have some control over how you consume this beer. I understand, like, putting your birthday cake in the fridge for 2 weeks kind of sucks. But at the same time, if it makes it taste 1,000 times better, maybe you should let that sit. But that's, again, all personal preference and everything else. So
we have a hoppy in front of us, an IPA.
Yep.
Tell us about what we're about to try.
So the Ami series essentially is Amarillo and some other type of hop. Our first one was Ami Citra. It was a triple. It became a triple because it kind of had a stuck sparge. I didn't put enough rice hulls in there to allow it to filter through. And then I got 75 gallons instead of 90. So hence the reason why I went from like a 9% or up to like a 10.1 or whatever the heck it was. This one is Ami Nectaron. And as the name would suggest, Amarillo Nectaron, and essentially we've been maintaining the same series with small tweaks to the malt and obviously the hop bill and everything else, and just trying, you know, experimenting. That's the whole point of this as a pilot. So Ami Nectaron, Amarillo Nectaron into the whirlpool, and then we dry hop it with a massive amount of Nectaron afterwards. Let's sit for a little bit to get some of those grassy notes that you have sometimes with Nectaron out of there. And that's what you're drinking now.
It's pretty smooth, though. This one is not, I don't think, in that really green stage.
It is not. To be fair, this one also was a limited release because I popped off a butterfly valve and lost 50 gallons onto the floor, which was amazing. Second time I've done it. I now have colored clamps, so I know not to touch stuff. So this one wasn't as heavily dry hopped, and I think a lot of the dry hops might have spilled onto the floor first. It's still smoother than the Ami Citra because we cut down on it, but that's, again, another learning experience. Maybe we drop off our hops after maybe 2 days, so you're getting a lot of that flavor, and then it kind of settles off, as opposed to doing like a 5 or 6 day dry hop and then pulling, you know. The best part about being a 3-barrel, which is what we are, is we have the ability to experiment, and we're not as concerned if a beer is really, really bad.
Yeah, no, there's just a lot less of it.
Yeah, so we'll take it as a learning lesson, but, you know, we try and keep it within, like, say, 2 parameters of, like, 2 to 5 pounds or 2 to 6 pounds, whatever. We guess what we think based on the acids in the hop and everything else, and then we just go from there and cross our fingers and... You know, here we are, I have Ami Nectaron, and it's tasty.
Of the beers that you have come out of here so far, which one is the one where you're like, God damn, I nailed it. Like, this is what I envisioned, and it came out exactly the way I wanted.
You know, I think the Ami Citra and Ami Citra 2, obviously the two most popular ones, are where I was kind of aiming for this. And for me, they're kind of newer style IPAs, or not newer style, but like what people are expecting from hazies.
Sure.
And I think after our first kind of attempts making the different beers, or did the different hazies. I think these ones kind of came out what we were aiming for from the very beginning, after figuring out how, you know, the water filters through our system and how much we get out of it and everything else. So I was definitely stoked about these. The other ones, you know, like our triples and our heffies and stuff like that, they came out like I expected them, you know, so it wasn't as crazy as a jump as it was from this one. But again, this is the current hype beers, is these type of beers. So seeing it go where it's gone and seeing it going kind of across the nation is pretty cool.
That is cool. I mean, knowing, I think that's super cool.
Going from mouth to toilet at some point in different entire area codes or time zones is pretty sweet. But yeah, I mean, I think we're going to continue with the series and everything else as far as this goes. We probably will bring back the original triple Citra. I'll just plan it to be a triple versus planning it to be a double and, you know, having an issue.
Although if it worked...
Yeah, maybe that's the reason why it tastes so good. Who knows, you know? Maybe I just have to mess it up every single time and kick the bottom of my my brew house as I watch the water dribble out.
Now, I wasn't able to attend opening week. Had a few people that I know that were able to. Besides IPAs, you had a cream ale, you had a stout, you had a table beer, and you had a triple on tap. And I know that one couple I'm friends with really, really loved a triple. How do you balance getting different beer styles here and also meeting the expectations of kind of the craft beer nerds who come here and only want hops?
So the nice thing is being the owner and the brewer, I don't have to fight with an owner about sales. I've told people from the very beginning, if we have 10 beers on tap, I don't want more than, you know, a third or a half of them to be IPAs. And it's a brewery. It's not an IPA bar. And I think that's kind of what you come to expect from some places nowadays, where all you see is IPAs coming out. And I think as you brew and as you progress as a brewery, having diversity in what you do is going to be huge, especially in the type of market we are. So our triple was really highly rated. The triple heffy, which we'll try a little bit later, also has been really highly rated. Essentially, the triple heffy was supposed to be my triple, except I had the wrong yeast, so it became a triple heffy. But brewed exactly the same, just with a different yeast. Now you get a little more bubble gum in it, and it's tasty as anything, and way too dangerous at 10.2. But, you know, again, you have people that come in for all different tastes and flavors. You know, that's why we have a seltzer up there that's, quote-unquote, low gluten, you know, because some people can't have it, you know. So it's just one of those things where you have to maintain diversity in order to what I feel succeed in the brew industry anymore. Of course, you can probably survive off of all IPAs, but then you're going to be ignoring a huge section of the market who doesn't want that.
And, you know, I feel like every year I'm like, you know, this will be the year where IPA sales will fall and other styles come up. It's been dominated for a while. They're not going anywhere. So, I mean, I think it's great that you have other styles here. And we have another beer that has appeared in front of us. Why don't you tell us about what we have in front of us?
I'm assuming this was the Heffy, right? All right. So, yeah, this is the triple Heffy, the Imperial Hefeweizen, which, again, started off as a Belgian triple. But I did not have the right yeast. I mixed up which one shipped when. Again, being smaller means I can have more access to yeast and not worry about the cost and everything else. Like, that's kind of all built into everything else. But even with, like, normal Belgian yeast, I feel like you burn out the yeast to get the flavors out of them. And, yeah, I mean, it's a one-time use mainly for me anyway, so.
And this is a very, I already had a few sips. This is a very dangerous guy for over 10% because it does not taste like.
It doesn't. I mean, the nice thing about it is, and for those of you that don't know necessarily, Hefeweizen yeast and Belgian yeast are pretty similar in yeast characteristics as far as the esters that come off of them, with the heffy yeast being a little bit more banana clove, and you get some of that bubble gum and, you know, the sulfur that's there in the beginning, but it also gives a little bit more body feel to it. So at a 10.2, it's almost, I won't say straight stoutish as far as like
it's
the
like
thickness.
Cream, yeah. Like a cream feel.
And I think it surprises a lot of people that come in that don't expect to enjoy a Hefeweizen. And they're like, oh my God, what is this? And I'm like, well, you said you liked white wine. You know, it's not exactly white wine, but it's going to be a little bit sweeter. And it'll hit your ABV rating that you're aiming for when you drink those at home. And it just surprises a lot of people. So, yeah, I'm the triple heffy, which was a play again with tripel and triple and, you know, try and have fun with it.
What would you say the demographic is here on a day like today? We're here before open, but on a day where the tap room is filled with people, is it what percentage local, what percent that is like furiously on their phone trying to get their untapped check-ins?
So today is a Thursday, which means we're more local. We have a lot of local people that come in and everything else. But in general, we are, I want to say 50% local. And 50, I mean, it's been 4 months now, so I can kind of check my statistics on the books and everything else. So we're like 50-50. We get a lot of people now that have started to come in from other places. Like we had a guy last night who drove an hour to get here, which blew my mind. Hey, man, nice to see you. Where are you from? Oh, I'm blah, blah, blah out in PA. Cool. So we do get a lot of new stuff, especially with the hype we're kind of getting for the IPAs. And the people that come in for the IPAs generally want the IPAs. The local market, you know, we have a mixture of young, old, everything else. People who like beer don't like beer. And again, you're drinking the Hefeweizen, which is kind of, again, like a honey brown for some people. They try it and it's not what they're expecting from a quote unquote beer. And they enjoy it and they're like, well, let me try something else. And, you know, maybe they go to the vanilla cream ale and it's, again, not a quote unquote beer. So it's a good mix. And I couldn't be happier for that. And again, I think that lends itself to trying to stay stable in an unstable market, you know.
Now, you had an Instagram post this week that kind of alluded to the future and a facility that's more family-friendly. First of all, we're sitting in the tap room. You said there's about 30 chairs or so. What is your future vision?
So luckily, we were able to finance this starting thing, myself and my wife. So small family-owned, operated, blah, blah, blah. It's nice because we don't have anybody to answer to and people to deal with, which allows us, again, to brew how we want to brew and do things how we want to do. The downside is, you know, starting smaller, I am grateful that I didn't lose 500 gallons on the floor and I only lost 50 the other week.
Sure.
So cut your teeth doing that stuff. But, you know, I'm not sure if you've... Have you been out to Warwick, PA?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, dude. That, I mean,
that place is... For anybody who has not been... First of all, it's a great family spot, too, with the outside space. It's massive, and it's gorgeous.
It's awesome. And, you know, we go out there, you know, now it's coming summer again. We'll be out there a lot and just hanging out outside and grabbing beer. We would love to have an area like that in New Jersey because there's not very many of them, besides maybe Screaming Hill and stuff like that, which has the outdoor space.
Which is, I mean, I think, technically a farm, too. I don't know what the licensing and all that kind of stuff has to do with it. But
so, I mean, now that they're opening up the ability to have outdoor seating and everything else, I think that's the ultimate goal is to create an area where you can bring a family and friends. And hopefully, I want to stay local to here because we are locals. Driving 2 minutes and to and from work every day is amazing. So if I had to go to four, that would double my commute, and but still be amazing. And I think we would probably try and keep this as our pilot facility where we could do these one-offs and the hazy IPAs and stuff like that where we can really experiment and then take what we learn from here and then upscale it to some type of kind of quarterly distribution, sending it out to different locations, blah, 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 you know. But honestly, with the... two kids we have at home, I would love to have a much bigger place that we can enjoy as much as everybody else can enjoy. With this, my wife brings and we set our kids on the thing and, you know, we take up two of the 28 seats and I'm already like, oh man, oh, that looks bad.
Check out my office.
Yeah. Let's go watch Bluey in the office.
All right. So I talked a little bit about this with you before we started recording. The last few months, maybe over a year now, we've seen several breweries in the state of New Jersey and around the country that have closed. Forgotten Boardwalk, Elementary, both of those have been around forever in New Jersey. Both of those, unfortunately, are no longer. When you hear and see that kind of thing, and when you were seeing that kind of thing before opening, did it scare you at all?
So... First of all, I think we should take Forgotten Boardwalk off the board because I think they did not close for their
leasing reason.
Yeah, I think I think there's the interesting thing is when you read online, and I've owned my other business for 20 years, is you do a lot of research about businesses and business practices and everything else. And it seems, you know, if a brewery closes down, there's a couple main reasons for it. And I don't want to say like this is about any of them, because it's not. I don't know their specific reasons or everything else. Is it's either mismanagement of the funds, you're not paying your taxes, which seems to be a huge one. People just ignore it. Oh, okay, well, that's crazy. I can't believe we owe that much. But I think a lot of people, and we in general, and businesses in general, get stuck in this idea that if you build it, they will come. You know, and that's not the case with craft beer anymore. You know, COVID kind of opened people's eyes up to a lot of different beers, where beers were getting shipped now because you weren't able to go to the place in general. So now they're trying Heady Topper next to the beer that they like locally, and they like the Heady Topper more because they've never gotten their hands on it. So then that means, oh my God, maybe I should try this other beer. And I'm not saying it's survival of the fittest, but you have to have some type of diversity in there where you're not set to a certain lineup that you think will support you for forever, because it won't. You know, look at InBev and people like that who have been trying to buy up some of the market of craft beers because they're not seeing the same production. You know, they're not seeing the same, or I shouldn't say production, but well, I guess technically, yeah. They're not seeing the same amount of people coming in and out and buying their beer anymore, because now they have access to all these other good beers. And you'll see kind of where their idea is. They have to diversify to stay on the market and on the radar. And if, you know, if somebody's tried your one beer and they thought it was good, but they haven't tried the beer next to it, maybe they're going to try the beer next to it.
Sure.
But if they know that your one beer was good and you have another beer next to it that they've never tried before, maybe they're going to try your beer instead of the other beer. So that's kind of been our entire idea with the pilot brewery, is we've brewed 37 times and we've brewed 34 different beers. I want to hit personally 70 or 80 before I start really rebrewing things, just because I really want to see where the market is for all these beers instead of just saying, hey, we have a product, let's just stick with that.
Now, have you gotten any pressure to repeat?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, we have the Bylong we've rebrewed twice because that was a vanilla cream ale. Again, it's one of those beers that's super simple, easy to sip. Tilly will be making another appearance. Believe it or not, that's the Amber Ale / ESB, if you want to call it that. I always have a tough time saying ESB because everybody hears extra special bitter. Oh my God, I don't want to drink. That's way too bitter. And you're like, it's named after my dog. She also looks very aggressive, but she's not, you know, it's not made to be that. It's an amber ale with more body. Enjoy it. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of been the big thing, is we have people that ask for stuff. But on top of that, you know, I still want to diversify. I still want to try other things and everything else. And yeah, well, you know, we'll see where it all goes and where it all leads and everything else, and take it from there.
Now, what we've mentioned some of the challenges already that you've had opening up some kind of, you know, things in the brewing phases. But what other challenges have you seen so far that maybe you didn't expect when opening?
You know, I think a big thing of a lot of this is. A lot of this is just the paperwork. You know, you always have these people who want to drink beer and want to brew beer and create beer and everything else. But the business side of it is a lot. And even though in my other business prior to this, it was a decent amount. But, you know, every beer brand registering TTB, the labels being created, so this way we could sell it without having to worry about that. And everything else under the sun, I think, is the highest pain in the butt of anything I've had to deal with. I figured, I knew it was going to be bad. It's the alcohol industry, right? but there's times I'll sit home and I'll just be like, hey, I'm not going to leave for the next 2 hours my office because I need to figure out how to do all this tax situation. So yeah,
there's a lot of the non-fun stuff.
Yeah. You know, I the brewing process has been, you know, you've been doing it for so many years, it's pretty straightforward. You think you do everything right and hope you do everything right and hope the yeast is happy and everything else and go for it. But yeah, the other stuff takes a little bit longer.
So I did want to touch on this. Again, we talked about the IPAs, but you have already released a stout in bottles. You have a porter on draft. You teased ahead to some barrel-aged stouts coming in the future.
Oh, yeah.
So actually, let's talk about those. Let's talk about some of the stouts you have coming up and what people can expect from those.
Yeah, let's see if I can pull a little bit off that fermenter.
Oh,
for you.
Yeah.
Right. So we have a guy that would come down and around from All Points West Distillery up in Newark, New Jersey. And he's hooked us up with a couple barrels. And obviously, we don't have a big facility here, so barrel aging is a little bit tougher. So having 15-gallon barrels versus 55 makes a lot more sense for us. So we are doing a Russian Imperial Stout that's going to be aged in a rye barrel. That one should be done in about 3 months or so, and then we'll see how it sits in the bottle for a little bit as we bottle. It'll probably be keg conditioned and then bottled. And then the other one is actually a rum barrel that we're going to take the same stout. We're adding coconut and chocolate to it and nice. Creating kind of a coconut chocolate stout aged over rum. And then that one's, we all have 10 gallons of that, or probably 9 once we give them a couple bottles. But yeah, I'm super excited to see how they turned out. It's been a while since I've done barrel aging, and I've done it as a home brewer before, just in 5-gallon barrels. So I assume the process is going to be the same, and all my research says it's going to be the same. So hopefully it turns out good.
Are you excited for that? Like, what's the most fun? What is the most fun thing to brew?
The most fun thing to brew is anything somebody enjoys.
Oh, that's a cop-out answer.
I mean, it is a cop-out, but it's also true.
Okay.
You know, because I think seeing somebody try something that they're not expecting to enjoy is awesome. It's the triple heffy.
Okay.
Would you, like, you see that on the menu, would you be like, oh, this is definitely going to be delicious, and you try it, and you're like, oh, shit, it actually is. But no, I think, you know, the beers that you're not expecting to make are sometimes fun. So, case in point, the triple heavy, where I had a different yeast, and I was just like, well, let's just do it. I mean, that's kind of the whole excitement of brewing. You know, when you get into the monotony of brewing the exact same thing over and over, it becomes redundant, and, you know, people are going to enjoy it. But when you make something new and somebody tries it, and they're like, oh, shit, wow, what is this? I'm like, ha-ha, I'll tell you in a second, but just enjoy that for now. That's definitely the best part of it for me, as an owner, as a brewer, as, you know, somebody in this community and everything else.
So you live 2 minutes from here, which is good because I had a question about the surrounding area. So for those who want to come visit, but it's a ride for them, you mentioned somebody, it was an hour and they came here from somewhere in Pennsylvania mm-hmm. to visit. You're 16 minutes from Brick Farm. You're 11 minutes from Meatheads for all you cheesesteak fans.
Delicious.
Like out there. You're 20 minutes from you're less than 20 minutes from Di Lorenzo's and one of my favorite pizza places, Papa's, home of the mustard pie. Any other local businesses you want to give a shout out or people should check out if they come visit here?
Oh, man, that's putting me on the spot. I mean, honestly, there's a Jamaican place right next door that's delicious. They make some meat pies. I
saw oxtail on the menu.
Yeah, dude, they make some good stuff. I mean, we're in a mini mall, so we have literally Jamaican, Chinese, Japanese, and Italian. And if you get here early enough, you can do a beer and a bagel.
Yeah, the bagel store was closed. I tried to get there before I got here.
Yeah, they usually close, I think, around 1 or 2. But yeah, I mean, you know, they're all great. Any other places? I've been my head in the sand with this brewery for the last 2 years. But no, I think you nailed most of them. Honestly, I love Meatheads. That's one of the few places we order from and have delivered and everything else. What are you bringing me?
The heavy.
Oh, no. We got the heavy right. Get some of the coconut stout. That's what I was pointing
nice.
To. It'll be nice and lower carb.
Oh, so Jose, if Yankee Runner fame is here, he showed up. He obviously, for those who know him, is super into photography, and I know that is your other love. So tell us a little bit about that and how that kind of integrated with the brewery.
So I'm kind of lucky because I went to school for graphic design, digital media, and business development, not on the business side of things, which probably would have helped knowing numbers and stuff like that, but more on the graphic design side. And that led into photography. And I got hooked up with an awesome photographer, this guy named Jeff Tisman, amazing photographer. Years ago, I was a new school soul, and he was like the old school guy. And I kind of taught him the new technical stuff with technology coming out, because we're talking 20 years ago when digital cameras were just really starting to make an appearance. So I kind of went from there, and that pretty much built this entire place, was just the income from that. But it allows me to kind of create a business identity for this. I had a marketing person come in. It's like, who does all your marketing and all your material? By the way, this one is not, it's going to be very flat. So you're trying something that was just aged in coconut and everything else.
Well, I can definitely smell the adjuncts on this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So we'll see where it is once it's actually cold and everything else, because I think you're running at like 55 degrees.
Tasty.
Yeah. So yeah, that's going to be a 12% Russian Imperial with coconut and cocoa. Not super, I'm not crazy into super big stouts with thickness to them. I feel like I still like things that are drinkable. So the pastry stouts, we don't do too much of. Actually, we haven't done anything yet with them just because they're so thick. I feel like you need a bowl of ice cream to eat them with.
The body on this one's pretty good, though, and the adjuncts definitely come through, and that's really flavor. Yeah. Is more important than body in my
opinion, there with you
in many parts of life.
All right, so anyway, back to the whole photography thing. Yeah, been doing that for years. Trudel Photography was my photography company, and I had the option to go through, and I do a lot of corporate work and stuff like that. But the funny thing is I actually use my cell phone more to do all of our PR stuff, just because I want to feel more real to life in this.
Sure.
And it's also way less of a pain in the ass to post to Instagram with
a digital camera, then send it to your email, and then
They create it. So if we ever do anything really cool, I'll probably bring out my nice cameras. But until then, my S21 from 4 years ago is still rocking and rolling.
So what's next? What can people expect in the next 2 months, let's say?
Because
I know you said the stout is about 3 months away. So let's talk about the next 2 months.
Probably the next 2 months we will have this stout out, but we won't have the barrel versions of it.
Gotcha.
So we'll have, I was contemplating kind of doing it as for this weekend for St. Patrick's Day, just because it kind of reminds me of those little chocolate coconut. What are they called? I never remember what they're called. The little chocolate coconut. I know. I can't remember where they are. I've got Irish potatoes. Yeah, it's the chocolate coconuts.
Yeah.
I was thinking about doing that, but it's not ready, so I'm not going to force it. Obviously, we're trying to kind of do one hazy a week just to satisfy that crowd and keep stuff coming in through there. Tilly Tilly, which is that ESP Amber, is going to be making another appearance as well as with our West Coastering, which is a good West Coast meets somewhat East Coast IPA. Trying to think what else we have in the fermenters right now.
So before you answer that, I know you said you didn't want to repeat too many beers. You wanted to try a lot of different ones, put different things out in a pilot program. But is there going to be a flagship beer, a beer that's going to be here all the time if you show up?
I've been asked this a bunch, and I...
Well, here's one more time.
I don't really believe in flagship beers.
Okay.
Like, I get the premise and stuff like that, but... To be fair, I go to the breweries because I want to enjoy the brewery. Like, I want to try different stuff. Like, I don't go necessarily to a brewery to try the same beer every time. If I know they're going to have something that's delicious, I'll try that over a flagship. You know, oh, yeah, this is our flagship, but we also have this one we just brewed last week. It's been getting...
I will try a new beer every time over something I've had.
So, like, when you see these people... I shouldn't say people. When you see breweries, and again, it's an old-school methodology of... Methodology? Yeah, we'll go with methodology. Yeah. That sounds good. Of just saying, like, you have to have your stable beers on tap all the time. You know, I don't necessarily agree with that for this location, because this is a pilot facility. Again, if we go to the next place, we probably will have those beers that we are pumping out for distribution, and obviously then we will have flagship beers at that location. I still think quarterly they should change, because I think people get bored of the same thing. We live in an Instagram world where if it's more than 10 seconds of your attention, you're already past it. And I think that goes through more things than just Instagram. I think it affects everything in our life at this point, and it's become something that we kind of have to live or die by. So 3 months versus 10 seconds is a little bit longer of a time frame, but I think it's still acceptable and everything else, you know, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Finally, sales pitch. Somebody who hasn't been here, why should they come?
We'll have something new.
I love it. I love that.
Literally everybody that comes in, they were like, I was here 2 weeks ago. Oh shit, nothing on that menu is the same. Like, yeah, sorry about that.
That's a very good thing. I love that.
Yeah, man.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us.
Do we handshake over mics?
Sure. Okay, handshake over mics. Yeah. All right. We'll be back with more after this. I'm going to try some beers here. But that's coming up.
Let's get the porter.
And welcome back to Season 4, Episode 8 of America the Brutiful. The American Cancer Society estimates that there will be nearly 300,000 new cases of prostate cancer and about 35,000 deaths in 2024. 1 in 8 men will be diagnosed with prostate cancer in their lifetime. And on a personal note, my uncle was diagnosed and treated for prostate cancer, so this is a topic that is of special interest to me. I want to welcome in Rick Like, founder of Pints for Prostates, to the podcast. Welcome.
Hey, thanks, Dan. Great to be here.
So let's start here. You yourself are a prostate cancer survivor. Tell us about your story.
Yeah, well, you know, my story starts off with a good friend of mine at work who was diagnosed with prostate cancer and really started bugging every man at work to get screened for prostate cancer. And at the time I was 47, I had no known family history of prostate cancer, and I always thought of it as kind of an old man's disease, something you don't have to worry about until you're 70. I eventually had a physical coming up with my doctor anyways, and so I repented and went in and asked my doctor to please do the PSA blood test, which my friend had told me about. The doctor basically said I didn't need that until I was at least 50 and my insurance probably wouldn't cover it, but I urged him to do the screening. And lo and behold, about a week later, I got a phone call from him asking me to come back in with my wife to have a follow-up visit. So when you get that kind of request, you know that something is up. And went back in and learned that I had a elevated PSA, and then had a biopsy performed and found out I had prostate cancer. It, you know, again, was kind of a out-of-body experience having somebody tell you you have cancer when you feel perfectly fine. And that's one of the issues of prostate cancer. By the time symptoms develop, the disease has already progressed to a stage 3 or stage 4, and you have bigger issues. In my case, I was lucky that I was detected when the cancer was fairly young.
So what made you start Pints for Prostates? How did you come up with the idea?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. You know, after I was diagnosed, I made the decision to have surgery. You know, that process, surgery, they give you some drugs to calm you a little bit, get you ready for anesthesia and all of that. And my wife was with me, I went through. I had successful surgeries back in 2008, so I'm coming up on my 16th anniversary from that. But when I got back home after surgery about a week later, my wife asked me if I was serious about that Pints for Prostates thing I was talking about. I had no idea, Dan, what she was talking about. She explained that, you know, after they had administered the first set of medications, I started talking about this idea I had. So I'm one of those people who believe in that saying that, you know, always do sober what you said you were going to do drunk. it'll stop you from opening your mouth in a lot of cases. So I decided, you know, where my friend had been out there urging a lot of guys to get screened, that we could do a fundraising event and call it Pints for Prostates and raise some money for a charity that helps guys with the disease. And so our original plan was to just do one event and be done with it. I write about beer. I have a number of friends in the brewing industry. So when the first event was held and there was some coverage around it, my phone started to ring. And And that was, you know, that was 16 years ago, and we've been doing events ever since.
Wow. So here's one thing that I saw. The Cleveland Clinic put out a study, which did not surprise me, and it should not really surprise anyone, and that's that men go to the doctor a lot less than women do. So why do you think that is, and how are you working to change that? Because I know a lot of times for men, you have to have something wrong with you to go. Like, a lot of times we need that push.
Yeah, you know, the reality is most guys think they're bulletproof. They have the attitude that it, you know, will never happen to them, no matter what the ailment is. And, you know, it's hard to explain, but when it comes to healthcare, women, as far as their philosophy goes towards it, they're probably 20 or 30 years advanced from men in this area. And guys really need to take charge of their health, and they don't. And that's the idea behind what we do at Plants for Prostates. We, first and foremost, we have an awareness mission, and we try to use the universal language of beer to reach people and educate them about prostate cancer. And then when we do go to festivals, we quite often will go along with a group that we support and that partners with us, the Prostate Condition Education Council. They provide free screenings for men. So the money we raise goes towards that effort. And so we'll go to a beer festival and we'll screen guys for cancer.
So let me ask this. When you say you go to a festival and you have screenings, and, you know, I just read that the Macon Beer Festival in Georgia a few months ago, you had 147 men screened at that festival. How does that screening work? Is it just a blood test for PSA, or how can I put this? Is it done kind of the old fashioned way? Like, how, you know, what are they, how does that work?
Yeah, so you know, so we go to festivals and we screen blood. We draw blood, and that PSA test, which stands for prostate specific antigen, will give you a number that is very useful to doctors in determining whether you need further screening, or if you need a biopsy, perhaps. And so, Macon Beer Festival, we screened 147 men last year. Within a couple of weeks of that, we were at the Great American Beer Festival, and we screened that weekend during the Denver Rare Beer Tasting. We screened another 130 guys. Over the years, we've literally screened thousands of men at events like this. And you know, they can be at a brewery. We do there's an event in San Antonio called Father Fest at Alamo Beer Company, and they screen guys during Father's Day. It's the idea that you can kind of catch guys at a place and at a time where their guard's down a little bit, and you can engage them in a conversation. You're not preaching to a doctor, to that tent, and roll up their sleeve, and we'll give them a blood panel afterwards. They get it confidentially in the mail. It has their PSA number in it. It also has three other numbers with it: glucose for diabetes, lipids for cholesterol, and heart disease, and then testosterone levels. So it's a pretty robust health screening for guys, and they spend about 5 minutes in the tent to get their blood drawn, and we send that out to them confidentially.
That is amazing. I love the idea. And this is about 15 years or so you've been doing this, and you've raised over $2 million. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're probably about 2.3, 2.4 at this point, yes.
That's unbelievable.
The craft beer community has been extremely generous. We have a number of brewers that have supported us over the years, and craft beer fans. support us, and so we you know, we take the money that we raised and put it back into the screening efforts and putting on these awareness events around the country. And we're pretty we're serious when it comes to transparency about the funds that we raise. Our website has a transparency page on it. All of our IRS 990s, going back to the start of the organization, are on there, and we show exactly where all the funds have gone over the years so people can feel comfortable donating something.
What are your goals moving forward? Because I think that's amazing that you have raised this much money. It must be kind of crazy, right? Did you ever expect to raise that much money when you started this?
No, Dan. Our expectation was we were going to hold months, kind of one and done. It sort of has taken off. As far as goals going forward, we're hoping to continue to do what we've done and reach more guys. One of the things that's a little bit of a challenge and a barrier right now is post-COVID. We went through this COVID time where for basically 2 years we weren't able to get out and do what we had been doing for the most part, because festival and events were not happening. And that's kind of a double-edged sword for us, because the majority of our fundraising to pay for these screenings came from festivals and events. And anybody who's around beer these days knows that a lot of the bigger festivals have even post-COVID, they're not, some of them have shut down and gone away. Others are smaller than they used to be. So we're continuing to work. We're out there trying to raise awareness. You mentioned Macon, Denver Beer Tasting, some other events that we're able to still get out to. But we're, as far as goals go, we're looking to, find some new partners, find some new events that we can take our message to.
And that Denver Rare beer tasting event, pretty awesome. I looked at some of the breweries that had done it in the past. Side Project, The Alchemist, Moxa, Fidens, and for us local people here in the New York, New Jersey area, Other Half, Twin Elephant, Referend. Sounds like an unbelievable event.
Yeah, it's an event that we started back. We're planning our 15th at the moment, it kind of started as a little bit of a almost side bet that I had with the editor of All About Beer at the time, where I suggested that people would be interested in rare beer. And if you think back to 2009, there weren't a lot of people doing barrel aging and some of these breweries that produce what the industry calls whales these days. But we went into it as kind of just a test, and we sold tickets out incredibly fast. And so we've been doing it ever since. The brewers bring incredible beers. They dip down into their personal libraries sometimes and bring beers that are that they brewed only for employees at the brewery or something that they release once a year that you have to get in line to get an allotment of. They'll save a keg of that for us and bring it. You can walk through the event and drink a range of things. Samuel Adams will bring Utopias quite often to the event, and special vintages of Utopias that people can try. And you mentioned Side Project, that's hugely popular, and folks just amazing products. Sierra Nevada has been with us quite a long time, right from the start, and we have breweries like Noda here in the Charlotte, North Carolina region, and in Raleigh's farmhouse from the Southwest, and it's just it's an amazing collection of breweries that come, and they come for a good cause. They donate the product, and you know, every year it's a collection of beers that you can't find anywhere else, and we could never recreate again because we get, in some cases, the last keg of a beer that's in existence.
Amazing. That sounds like a fantastic, fantastic event. Now, hopefully the people that are listening want to help the cause. And the good news is there's a way you can do that, and you can do that very soon. So let's talk about the Pints for Prostates Beer Lovers Auction. You have some incredible beers up for auction, and the money goes to a good place. So tell us about that.
Yeah, it's something that we've been doing. We always have a silent auction at the Denver Rare Beer Tasting. So during COVID, we decided to go online with that version of the auction. And so each year now, we bring back an online version of it. And you know, it's a unique thing. We have rare beers. We actually have a 2011 bottle of Samuel Adams Utopias up on the auction, but we've got a collection from Deschutes in Oregon of their Cellar Door Society. We've got some rare beers from Barry Acorn up in Syracuse, New York. Other people are in there, side projects in there, Rogue, Perennial, Mooksa, I know I'm leaving some folks out here. Captain Lawrence is in there. We've got Ozark, a great beer from the middle of the country, Forager up in Minnesota. Just an amazing collection of beers up for bid. But there's also some brewery experiences that people can bid on that are actually, as far as values in the auction right now, those are some of the better ones. It ranges, like, if you're in the Houston area, St. Arnold's there has a beer there for six. Brews, which is a brewery in Denver, has a Belgian beer course for six people up for bid.
Oh, wow.
Whole City in Charleston is doing a private tour for 10 people with some flights of some pretty incredible beer. Gray Sale, which is a neat brewery up in Rhode Island, is doing a lunch with the brewer and a tasting for six people. So lots of good stuff that's in there, and some collectibles too.
Amazing. Thank you for all the work that you've been doing. And again, you can donate money, get some cool beer in the process for those out there listening. So thank you so much for everything you've done. I think it's fantastic work and continued success and help. All right. We will be back with more right after this.
Can you be so can you know what I feel?
All right, we are back. Season 4, episode 8 of America the Brutiful. We are at local releases, and since St. Patrick's Day is around the corner, let's start with Kane, Port Omnas. They do it every year. We'll start with the Triple Coconut Port Omna, 8.1%. All these are 8.1% milk stouts. This one is conditioned on freshly toasted and shredded coconut at a rate three times the normal dosing rate. Kane does a great job with dark beers, so excited to try these. I still have yet to try any of these variants. They also did the Shamrock Shake, which is conditioned on vanilla beans, Madagascar and Tanzanian vanilla, and crushed peppermint leaf. And they did Irish Candy, which is conditioned on fresh toasted and shredded coconut, Madagascar vanilla beans, and then added cinnamon prior to packaging. Tin Barn, Crash and Burn. This is a triple hazy hopped with Pacifica, Citra, Brew One, and Motueka. The can art for this one is Calvin and Hobbes inspired, and I'm a huge Calvin and Hobbes fan, so when I saw this, I was super excited. I also had this beer earlier today, and it is It is very, very good. They also announced, Tin Barn did, that Trillium will be one of the breweries for their Block Party Beer Fest in August. So definitely keep an eye out for that. If you haven't gotten tickets yet, they are on sale. Equilibrium, they did a whole Pi Day inspired event earlier today. We're recording on a Friday. Peanut Butter Pie Imperial Stout came out. That's a long boil Imperial Stout with added dry roasted peanuts, peanut butter and chocolate covered peanuts, Virginia peanuts, Vanuatu vanilla, and cocoa nibs. They also did Pie Squared. This is a 9.99% triple IPA with Citra Lupamax and Galaxy Whirlpool and Strata Citra, Citra Lupamax, and Galaxy Dry Hop before adding vanilla. They also did What's Past is Present. It's a collab with Voodoo, a double IPA dry hop with Nelson and Galaxy. Other half, Double Potato Spaghetti Town, 8.4% Imperial IPA hopped with Citra, Enigma, Sabro, Yukonot, and Cashmere. They also did Pigeon Soup, 8% Imperial IPA with Simcoe, Nelson, and Centennial, and Hand Truck Heroes, 8.2% Imperial IPA with Mosaic, Mosaic Incognito, Citra, Motueka, and Citra and Mosaic Cryos. District 96 has a release that I'm really excited for, and that's Snake Orchid. It's a triple IPA collab with Oak Flower, and of course, they also did a St. Patrick's Day inspired beer, Murphy's Law, 6.5% Irish Stout. We talked about Oak Flower with that collab with District 96. They did Ring 11, 11th in the series now, which is kind of crazy. 5.5% Hazy Pale Ale, dry hopped with Motueka and Ruwaka. Down to Atlantic City to the Seed. Listen Sooner Than Speak. It's a 5.2% Pale Ale, dry hopped with Rakow, Motueka, and lastly dosed with Freestyle Cohia Motueka Keef, which is a hop concentrate infused with passion fruit. And they also released a smoked version of their beer, As Simple as Shadows. And from Atlantic City, let's go out to Long Island for Root and Branch. A few different new releases. Burning from the Inside, it's a multi-oat wheat double IPA, brewed and heavily dry hopped with Citra and Mosaic. They also did a new version of the Castle series, and that is the Castle Nectaron, multi-oat wheat American pale ale, brewed and dry hopped entirely with New Zealand Nectaron hops. And they did 1,000 Plateaus, multi-oat spelt wheat double IPA with Motueka and Nelson hops, and Eyes Without a Face, multi-oat wheat IPA, brewed and heavily dry hopped with a blend of American hops. And they also teased ahead to collabs with the Vale and Hudson Valley, so keep an eye out for those. Conclave has a few new beers. Clearly Pils, a 5.2% Czech Pilsner. Fifth Element, an 8.5% double IPA hopped with Citra, Rakow, and Motueka. And Washed in Black, it's an 8% smoked porter, which is now available in bottles. I had that beer last time I was at Conclave. Delicious, delicious beer. So try to get your hands on that. Twin Elephant Nosh, they have a new one. It's an American double IPA, 8.2%. This one is with Citra and Cashmere. And also, for those music fans, Stephen Brodsky and Adam McGrath of the band Cave-In will be performing there on April 20th. Evil Twin NYC has a bunch of new beers, but let's highlight two of them. Bittersweet Symphony, it's an ESB. And General Marlin, a double dry hopped IPA with Ruwaka, Rakow, and Nelson. Magnify Boba Breeze, a 5% smoothie sour that pours bright, bright green. It is brewed with honeydew bubble tea, coconut cream, and vanilla ice cream. Obviously, this one contains lactose. Very interesting beer. They also did Frosted Flakes, an 8% breakfast-inspired Imperial IPA brewed with lots of oats and lactose, Citra, Mosaic, and Amarillo hops, and conditioned on vanilla. Also, Intergalactic Event, a 6.5% variant of their Main Event IPA. This version is double dry hopped with Galaxy. Obercreek, we mentioned they've been killing it with the Quartet series. They did Quartet 155. It is an 8% double IPA dry hop with Nectaron, Galaxy, Citra, Simcoe, and Motueka. They also did Chops, an 8% double IPA, heavily dry hop with Citra, Citra Lupamax, Columbus, Centennial, and Cascade. Let's go back to New Jersey for Ghost Hawk. The Summoning Bell, a 5.8% hazy pale ale hopped with Eldorado, Citra, and Vic's Secret. They also did Wayward Hellion. It's a 7.9% Belgian golden ale. Noble Savage, I had this beer yesterday at a bottle share, and this one is super, super good. It is called Cognitive Capacity. It's a 7.6% IPA. Dry hop with Nelson Sauvin and Rakow from Freestyle Hops. Something to keep on the calendar if this date is not already in your calendar for other reasons. Brick City teased ahead to April 20th, which is going to be their date of when they released their Silk City beers. Of course, that is also the date for Swansea Day. And for other people, for some people out there, that is somewhat of a national holiday for some of you. So April 20th, keep that on the date. Keep that on your calendar, I should say, for Brick City. Hudson Valley released a new beer. It's called Bay's Rose. It's a collab with Daniel Belude. It's a botanic pilsner conditioned on pink peppercorn, French tarragon, lemon, and hibiscus. For you foodies out there, it's pretty exciting to have a collab with, honestly, one of the best chefs in the world. Drownlands is going to have an event coming up on Saturday, March 30th. They're calling it their Hoppy Easter Celebration. There will be live music. There will be an outdoor egg hunt. There's going to be photos with the Easter Bunny. There will be a mimosa bar. There'll be food and drink specials, including a very hoppy tap list. So if you have kids and you're looking for an excuse to also go to a brewery, maybe something to put on your calendar. Saturday, March 30th, Hoppy Easter Celebration. All right, folks, coming up after the break, we'll talk to Chase from Top Beer Drops on the top beers in the country from the last week. And that is coming up right after this.
Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you gotta hang tough to make it. History repeats itself, try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the one, and you can have your dream. You're the best around, nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around, and nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around.
All right, and welcome back. Season 4, Episode 8, America the Brutiful. In the past week, the week from March 2nd to March 8th, 513 new beers were released from the top 440 breweries from around the United States. And joining us, as he does every week, Chase from Top Beer Drops is here to tell us about the top beers of the past week. And we're going to start at number one, and this is a brewery that has made it a few times. We've talked about it. Let's talk about the number one drop of last week.
Let's do it. Thanks for having me, Dan. So number one this last week was the Warbler Brewery out of Del Mar, New York. They created a double New England IPA called Sheesh with a 4.82 on Untappd. You know, we've got a couple of days that have happened in between. We're recording this on the 15th. Let's see how those ratings are holding. It looks like it's still at a 4.76, so really high for, double New England IPA there. And it's got 34 ratings, so I would say that's probably a decent sample size there.
That's a really good sample size, I think. And I, you know, I've talked to you about this kind of outside of the podcast, a place I'm going to have to check out. And I still have yet to go to Fiden's actual spot as well. I've been there for can sales at the old location. I have not been to the tap room. There's a lot of traveling I need to do coming up. Let's talk about number two. Bring us in on number two.
Sure. Number two is it's a collaboration between 608 Brewing and Barrel Theory. So out of Wisconsin there. Beyonder. It's an imperial pastry stout. Looks like, I don't know if I have tasting notes on this one. George T. Stagg barrels is what it's aged in and then conditioned on coconut, macadamia nuts, and roasted peanuts. So that was at number two, 4.73 on Sunday, and it looks like it's holding up to at a 4.2 1.67 right now.
I mean, amazing score. And then tied for number two is a beer I literally had a few hours ago, and that is Tin Barn's Lost Luau, which at the time was a 4.73. Curious to where that is, but that is a fantastic beer.
Yeah, let's check it out. It looks like 4.73 on Sunday, 4.67 still.
Okay. So. Identical to the number two drop from where they started to where they are now. Curious to see, because I actually had Lost Luau with Crash and Burn, which is their newer beer, and I like Crash and Burn better, so I'm curious to see how that one's going to do. Yeah. Number four drop I had yesterday, pretty crazy, Noble Savage Cognitive Capacity. This was one of the better IPAs I've had this year. I know we're only in March, but I've had a good number of beers. Like, fantastic, fantastic beer. So where is that one now? It was a 4.71 when the list came out. Do you know what the Untappd world has adjusted that to?
Yeah, it looks like it's sitting at a 4.63 today. So still pretty high, falling off a little bit, but not tremendously. So, I mean, and those are big words, Dan. If that's like one of the top IPAs you've had so far this year, that's huge.
Yeah, it was a fantastic beer. All right, let's talk about number five. It's a brewery we have talked about as well.
Yeah, big time. Still one I haven't gotten my hands on, so it's on my list. But Brothership Brewing came in at number five with barrel-aged space debris coconut. So it's an imperial stout, obviously aged on coconut there, and looks like it spent 34 months in rye whiskey and bourbon barrels. So wow. huge beer. 4.69 when we profiled it, and it looks like it is 4.68 today, so holding up pretty well.
And I've said this before, for those that are stout lovers out there who have yet to try Brothership or are looking for something new to try, definitely get this on your radar. Brothership makes some really, really good dark beers. Number six drop was a collab that I was very excited to see. I have yet to have this beer. I've heard it's fantastic. And obviously, you know, it must be fantastic if it's on this list. Tell us about number six.
Sure. Number six is a big collab between Fidens and The Seed. It's a beer called Amanda's Axe. When we profiled it, it had a 4.59 on 117 ratings. And get this, it's got 171 ratings, and it's jumped up to a 4.61. So wow. I think this might be definitely worth seeking out here.
And I don't know if you have this info on you, but of all the beers on this list, it's probably got to be either first or second in a number of actual check-ins, because that's a lot of check-ins for, you know, basically a week.
It's probably second. Once we get to number 10, I think number 10 probably has a few more.
And we'll explain why when we get to number 10.
sure.
All right, number seven, a brewery that has been making it with this series, and that's Uber Creek with Quartet 154. Again, cannot stress enough, a place you guys should visit if you haven't yet. And the weather is getting really nice, and it's one of the better places to kind of sit and have a beer when the weather is nice. So really excited to see Uber Creek back on this list. Let's talk about number eight.
Yeah, number eight is the Meadery out of Villa Park, Illinois, a suburb of Chicago. So Standard Meadery create a session mead called Pina Colada, kind of a fun spelling there. Session mead, so sitting at a 5%. And when we profiled it, it was at a 4.55. It looks like it's holding that rating. Doesn't have a ton of check-ins. I think the most remarkable thing here is the color on this one. It's like Ninja Turtle green, I guess, is what I would classify it as.
Love it. I can picture that in my mind. All right, let's talk about the number nine. Number nine and 10 are kind of came out in the same time. Obviously, we're talking about last week, but let's start with number nine. Tell us about number nine.
Sure. Number nine is our friends down south, Corporate Ladder Brewing out of Palmetto, Florida, right outside of Tampa. And they came out with an imperial pastry stout called Barrel Age 5-Minute Break. Let me see if I can get some. It looks like it's aged in Sazerac rye barrels for 26 months and Elijah Craig 13-year barrels for 22 months, conditioned on peanuts, chocolate, peanut butter. Yeah, I think this was this and the next one were definitely releases that were around Tampa Bay Beer Week. Another, I don't know if we want, should we chat about Angry Chair and some of their releases as well while we're on the topic?
Yeah, sure. I mean, they had the biggest festival for Tampa Bay Beer Week. So sure. I mean, that's a brewery I obviously am very fond of. So, kind of surprised not to see Angry Chair on here.
Yeah, you know, when I was combing through the list this last week, there was probably at least four or five beers that were rating higher than any of these on any of the beers on the list that were coming out of Angry Chair. The hard thing that I any sort of release information or bottle information on their Instagram, so I don't want to be snubbing them. I do want to shout them out that they created a ton of awesome beer for Tampa Bay Beer Week. It just happened to. I personally couldn't find anything, so if anyone has eyes on any of those bottles that came out from Angry Chair, reach out to me or Dan, and we'll be sure to profile them.
Nice. And number 10 is, again, from Tampa Bay Beer Week, and it's from Woven Water, Vanilla Rye Obsidious, which, no surprise that this one would be on there. Like, a lot of the Woven Water dark beers are fantastic.
Yeah, that was the only, as we mentioned or teased out earlier, that's the only beer that had more ratings than that Fighton's beer. They have 183 ratings, and they're still sitting at that 4.53.
So. Oh, wow. Great. So it actually went up a tick.
It did.
All right, so the Untappd, and I talked about this a little bit in the intro of the show, Untappd released their community awards, and you had some interaction with the Untappd folks.
Yeah, much to my surprise. You know, I don't get a ton of interaction on Instagram from Untappd, but when I reposted their story about the community awards, their social media person reached out to me and said, hey, we've had our eyes on you for a while. We would love to do a collaboration. So we're in talks with, running a few ideas past them of, what could we do in terms of, speeding up the process or making it a little bit more accurate. We're also talking about possibly putting together some regional lists of, over the last week or month, what are the best beers that have been released in your area? And then Dan and I were chatting before the podcast about maybe creating a top beer drops badge of, you just checked into the number one beer from the last week or whatever that looks like. So more to come, and definitely accepting any and all ideas if anything's fresh with you listeners.
Yeah, so if you have any ideas, message Chase, message us, and we'll take a look and we'll consider whatever ideas you guys have out there. Very exciting. You know what I think would be very fun, but also very, very, very challenging. And it's too late to do this, I guess, this year. But for somebody, hopefully not myself, because this would be something that would require a lot of work. But if somebody out there would want to try the number one beer for every week, that would be quite the feat. Maybe 2025. Like somebody out there should try to do that. It would be really cool.
I will happily send some top beer drops merch if someone can prove to me that they had the number one beer for another week in a year.
Yeah, they would need pictures or something for proof. And that would be very, very tough, but that would be really cool. All right, Chase, thank you so much for joining, as always. And until next time, America, drink up and stay beautiful.